Hello, everybody. So I'm George Mylan, and today I found out that Aldrich Ames had died at the age of 85. Now, I take a lively interest in all matters espionage, but he died 2 days ago. So Mr. Ames is infamous for having been a long-term spy for the Soviet Union, and that was inside the FBI. He was on counter-espionage, I think, mainly, as in order to catch foreign spies in the United States. He also served with them abroad, Colombia, for instance. Now, the Federal Bureau of Investigation is mostly inside the United States against foreign spies, terrorists, whether they're American or not, but they're in the USA, and indeed organized crime. Could be large-scale drug smuggling or issues that cross states. They kidnap someone in one state, bring him, her to another state. Right. They don't deal with petty matters or like a domestic murder. They don't deal with like burglary and shoplifting and vandalism and stuff like that. So things are against federal law as against state law. So that was Aldrich Ames. But anyway, he found out the identity of various people in the Soviet Union who are working for the CIA, that Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA obviously is American External Intelligence. So yes, they got their headquarters at Langley, Virginia, but they're going out spying all over the world. And obviously the FBI and the CIA have to work together. They're on the same team, but apparently, you know, they're usually sort of in interdepartmental rivalries. Anyway, he knew something about who the American assets were inside the Soviet Union. Obviously they didn't tell him names, but he had little bits of information he could pass on to the Soviets. So Ames, was born in 1941 in Wisconsin into a middle-class family. He had not very distinguished academic career. Anyway, he decided to try and help out the CIA doing sort of internships and so on. So he didn't complete his degree, but that didn't stop him being hired by the FBI. Of course, it's the early 60s and far few people had degrees. He wasn't drafted in those days. They had, you know, compulsory military service for some young men. Only about one in 10 young men was drafted. It was quite a normal thing back then in the United States for young men to volunteer and serve up to 5 years and then leave. Having done that, you wouldn't be drafted. I mean, you either drafted or you volunteered. If you're drafted, you were shorter. But anyway, he went straight into the CIA. He subsequently got a degree whilst working for them. And he said he was fascinated by history. So he was satisfactory, had some postings abroad, and in some ways was a conventional CIA officer. So he had a bit of a drinking problem like father before him. And despite some worries about how he's performing, he wasn't performance managed out or anything like that. So one of his jobs was to speak to Soviets or in the United States who were willing to pass secret information over to the United States. Because obviously in the Cold War era, it was very difficult to get out of the Soviet Union. Only trusted communists were allowed out, Olympic athletes, diplomats, certain high-level musicians, actors, or whatever, to go abroad for a trip, to fly the red banner, give a positive impression of the Soviet Union and come back. And they all had a privileged life with the Soviet Union. The idea being the average Soviet, they saw just how good life was in the United States or Denmark or Italy or Ireland or anywhere, would never come back. Obviously if you did defect, then that's it, your family gonna be punished. Not killed in those days, by the 60s, I think not sent to the Gulag, but demoted. They would have problems. They would never be allowed to go abroad. He had to apply for an exit visa to go abroad. They couldn't even travel around free in the Soviet Union. I know there are 15 republics or countries, as they call them now, couldn't even travel around freely within the republic. They needed a pask to go from this district to that district. But anyway, so that's how oppressive it was. But some of those people who Soviets were allowed to go to the United States were very, very select band, only a few hundred any one time maximum. They would be approached by the FBI, could they cultivate them? Obviously, they will say in these intelligence matters, it's mice, money, How am I forgetting number two, ideology, compromise, ego. Why would someone pass secret information about his side to the hostile side in such a situation? So partly, yes, just hard cash. Okay, that's money. ideology start to believe in democracy and capitalism, disbelieve in communism, or the other way around. Or it could be because they want independence for Armenia or Uzbekistan or whatever, and compromise. You found out something embarrassing about them, found them in bed with a man, woman, that he or she was abusing drugs, he or she badmouthed his or her boss. So you got photos, sound recordings, video, whatever, could shame this person. And then ego saying, you're the greatest spy we've ever got. Wow, you really outfoxed them. We so appreciate you. Give that person the recognition, the laud that he or she never received from his or her own side. People who are burning with resentment to be part of a promotion, feel underappreciated, undervalued. I can't remember who said that happy people don't do this. If they are validated by their own side, but they're feeling disaffected, they lust for vengeance or whatever it is. So it'd be a combination of two or three or even all four of these ones. So see whether they're willing to do this. But obviously there could be a double agent who's passing information to the Americans, but might be chicken feed, low value, verifiable information, things that the Soviets know the Americans are already aware of. So it doesn't do any harm to the Soviet Union to tell them anyway. That establishes the bona fides of the double agent in the American eyes. And then as well as feeding some true but worthless information, can mislead the Americans, giving them some disinformation. Had to be on the lookout for that one. Okay, so he was the handler of some Soviets who were there in New York City, United Nations diplomats, who they thought, the Americans thought, were providing with real information. But anyway, he was a slacker and he broke the rules about various things. He left behind some highly confidential documents on a train and stuff like that. Eventually was sent to Mexico and he learned some Spanish. He was married, he had children, and he was a womanizer. And then he began a long-term relationship with a Colombian woman from a wealthy family. And she was already helping the CIA, so they weren't too married about that. He got divorced and he married this other woman. But you know, they like people is to have a secure private life. He, she is married, happily married, stays with that person. They're recruitable vulnerability. So the person is unfaithful. Could he or she be blackmailed? If the person's a sex addict, that's also risky. Could be rewarded with sex by the other side. They want someone who's psychologically stable, dependability of what matters. So he was unsuitable on many levels. But anyway, he'd regularized his private life by divorcing his wife and marrying this Colombian lady. And the United States had a good relationship with Colombia, although there was increasing problem with large-scale cocaine production and that being smuggled into the United States. This Colombian government was battling against that without much success. Remember, the 1980s was the height of Pablo Escobar's reign of terror. Anyway, so first of all, he'd broken the rules by not informing the FBI that was having this liaison with this other woman. Now, although he actually was FBI, because he was abroad, he was meant to be helping the CIA and stuff like that. So his alcohol abuse became embarrassingly evident, and so on. But so he was back to the United States, and later on, he was working for the CIA rather than the FBI. But anyway, he found out so much about what the CIA was doing against Komitet Государственной Безопасности, the Committee for State Security, that was the main Soviet intelligence agency, both internal and overseas, and Glavnaya Razvedka Upravlenia, which is main intelligence directorate, which is the Soviet military intelligence. And so it really is about the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, what weapons have the enemy got, what are their battle plans and stuff like that. And also just kill the enemy. The KGB, the first director abroad, they were the gentlemen's ladies and scholars of the intelligence world. And they weren't into killing people. It was usually the GRU, this would be a wet operation. What was I going to say? So he needed money. He had to pay a big alimony to his ex-wife. So there was an easy way to do this. And his new wife, Rosario, the Colombian, she had very expensive tastes. So anyway, that is when he thought, well, the easy way to make money is sell things. My USP is intelligence. He knew about CIA spying operations of the Soviet Union. It's very, very difficult to do. It was a police state. You couldn't travel freely. The Soviets had minimal contact with Western foreigners. It was looked on with suspicion if you spoke to a Western foreigner. That, you know, this is a top priority. In proportion to the population, the KGB was like 10 times bigger than that in the United States. They got no civil liberty there. Foreign diplomats were constantly under surveillance, and so forth, not merely about telephones. The telephones were tapped, the post was open. That really, the KGB had limitless powers to surveil the population. But nevertheless, the Americans achieved some success with this. So then he began telling the Soviets what he knew. He said these things were really worthless, what he told them, but he was getting $50,000 in 1985, and that was serious money. It's like $500,000 today. Remember how poor the average Soviet was? That was serious money. So they wanted him. Anyway, it went on. So in the long run, he identified lots of Soviet agents to the other side, including Oleg Gordievsky, who died just 2 years ago. And remember, he was the about to become chief of station for the KGB in London, and was summoned back to Moscow for interrogation because Ames didn't know Gordievsky's name, but he knew lots of other details, like he's born in 1938. I don't remember if I got the year exactly right. He's married to someone who's half Azerbaijani and he's got two daughters. I'm just making it up, but the jigsaw, and there might be only one person who meets that description, and so on. So that was Ames. And in those days, they were usually executed. Shows, you know, how cruel that the Soviet Union was as opposed to the United States, the United Kingdom, other countries. And so that was it. So they kept losing agents in the Soviet Union. And what on earth was happening? The CIA, there was another American who leaked information to the Soviet Union who was caught. And they began to think, who could it possibly be? Who had access to this information? What's the common factor here? People noted that Ames was really living it up. How could he possibly afford that on his modest salary and things like that? And then he was allowed to meet Soviet diplomats and report it. That was part of his job, have lunch with them. But large amounts of cash would be handed over at these. We think the FBI could easily have had someone to covertly film them. But anyway, he got away with it. And sometimes he was brazen enough to put a lot of money straight into a bank account the next day. You know, you meet the Soviet diplomat, then you put thousands of dollars in. Well, where did that money come from? There's a very, very obvious explanation. So it was in 1994 when they were finally able to bust him. So they've been watching him for a long time. And in 94, he was about to fly to Moscow to go to a conference. But the FBI worried if he did, he might defect, he might never come back. Anyway, that's when he and his wife were arrested. It's when Bill Clinton was president, as a holding charge as tax evasion, because they could prove, this is a very easy bit, the tens of thousands of dollars he'd had in cash and not declared for taxation. If they couldn't get him for anything else, that was a slam dunk. Anyway, so then he pleaded guilty to avoid the death penalty. Because this was treason, he could have been executed. So, so many intelligence operations were scrapped. People have painstakingly worked on these ones, and they came to nothing. And at least 10 Soviet people who were working for the United States were executed. Now, had he not pleaded guilty yet been convicted, would he have been executed? It'd be quite a step to execute someone in peacetime. But then again, he had caused the deaths of other people. You could say that was murder. Okay, he's an American citizen, and he was working for a hostile country. And all right, they weren't actually at war against the United States. But the thing is, further than that, he'd voluntarily taken oaths when he joined the FBI, when they joined the CIA, and he was breaching those oaths, not in a minor way, in an absolutely enormous way. He didn't do it once or twice. He did it hundreds of times over about 10 years. I think it was over 9 years. And that was eventually him. I think it was at dead drops used to pass information to the Soviets. He couldn't risk meeting them to hand over information. So maybe he didn't even know who his handlers were. And he said, really, he just did it by money. Okay, so I think there have been some polygraph tests which have been suspicious, but he said, oh, I just had strong coffee. He had managed his breathing to try and slow down his heart rate, because the heart rate supposedly speeds up slightly before you people tell a lie or something like that. Compare it with his baseline. So that was him. He pleaded guilty to life imprisonment, and there was no chance he'd be paroled. They went easy on his wife, who got only 5.5 years, but was released early. And he gave interviews about this, saying it was unwise, and it was really just avarice for him to do this. He wasn't attracted to communism whatsoever. He did it for completely capitalist reasons. So yeah, it was in the Soviet Union, people were executed for a fraction of what he did. So that was Aldrich Ames. It's difficult to have sympathy for him. I mean, I do seem to feel a bit sorry for this guy, spending his life in prison. But look at the people he sent to their deaths. And they were real people too. And I know there was some wrong on the American side, on the capitalist side in the Cold War. There were atrocities committed. There were oppressive regimes were propped up. That's true. The Soviet Union was much worse. The USA itself wasn't that bad, but the Soviet Union really was. Right up until 1991, you know, it was only right at the end that they had fear of free elections and free speech and somewhat fair trials and all the rest of it. So that is Aldrich Ames. He will not be missed. But anyway, he's a salutary tale. Well, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallan792@gmail.com. Goodbye.